Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, with your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush. Now let's join the conversation.
Happy to be back with you folks for another week of the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with John Rush, Neil Boron, myself, Bob Duco. Roger Marsh not with us this week. We'll explain why in just a little bit when we get into our discussion. But guys, how are you?
Great,
very
Bob.
Good, Bob. Thank you.
Good. Always good talking with you. Always good catching up. There we go. I heard a sound, but you know what? We're okay now. All right. This week, and by the way, we want to encourage everybody when listening to the podcast. Certainly, you can listen to this podcast in your local station. We know that. You can also listen online at crawfordmediagroup.net. The second half of the podcast, if it plays on your local station, great. If not, listen to it at crawfordmediagroup.net or Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. This week, we're going to talk about a news story that came out in the news a few weeks ago. Last month, you had surgeons in New York that for the first time successfully attached a pig's kidney to a human being and had this kidney function for 3 days. Now, the human was brain dead, the kidney was outside the body, but what it does do is it sets the stage for humans to basically someday start receiving kidney transplants from pigs. Now, we know that there's a lot of humans that already receive heart valves from pigs. There are many people walking around today that their heart valve are from pigs. Back in 1984, you had a baby that survived 21 days with a baboon's heart. But it seems as though the blending of humans and animals is increasing, and it's taking on new levels now. And the amount of animal parts that are in humans seem to be getting more and more. And there's even, we're seeing the kind of hybrid chimeras that are being created where you have animals with human cells injected into them as well. We're going to talk about that aspect of this a little bit later in this podcast. But for right now, I want to have a discussion about whether it's okay as Christians to have the human body supplemented with animal parts, basically animal organs replacing human organs inside the body. Is that in any way undoing God's plan, the humanity that He created us in? And so there are some Christians that are concerned about this. We're playing God. We're going too far. We're undoing the humanity that we're created in, and we're trying to thwart when it's our time to die, and whatever the arguments are. And this discussion actually strikes a little close to home for us because our friend Roger Marsh, who's not with us today, the reason that he's not with us today is because he's having a procedure on his aortic valve, which is a cow valve. So Roger is actually part animal. Most people don't know that. So we always knew there was something a little bit off about Roger, this is what it is. That's right. Roger has a cow valve in him, and they got to do some tweaking and some work on that today, and so that's why he's not with us. And by the way, we joke around, but of course we encourage everybody to be praying for Roger that everything goes well and smooth in his surgery today. But let's go around the table and talk about this. Guys, there are some people, and maybe, Neil, maybe we could start with you. You know, you're a pastor as well. What are your thoughts, and are there any concerns about human beings replacing body parts with animal body parts and, in essence, kind of becoming part human, part animal, albeit 99% to 1%, but still? Should there be any concerns about that? Because I'm telling you right now, there are some Christians who say this is not appropriate. It's going too far. It's thwarting the humanity that God designed us to be.
Yeah, well, in light of, you know, Roger's situation, I think we better – I'm going to tread lightly on this one. I don't know. I honestly – I have as many questions as I have answers today, for sure. I mean, we're kind of out on a limb with this one, and I think that we can – you know, try to lovingly and biblically speculate together what the Word of God says about this kind of stuff. I think some of the other things that are being worked on right now, you know, implanting human cells into animals and the potential creation of a human-animal hybrid, which I think some people say has actually occurred, but, you know, can these things reproduce? Whatever, those are other questions. But the idea of just using animal parts to enhance life for humans, I don't have such a big problem with that at all, actually, because, I mean, we've known about pig valves and bovine valves for years. And then I don't want to, this isn't a trite statement, it's just a, you know, realistic statement. We eat animals, mm-hmm. We skin animals and use their skins for warmth and clothes. God did that, actually, right, in the garden. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't know where you'd draw those lines either. Am I saying everything's okay? No, I don't think so. I think we really need to investigate, see what's going on here and see where we're headed with all this. But the idea of enhancing human life, you know, eradicating disease or assisting human beings who I believe are above animals because we're created in the image of God and they're not. They are God's creation, but not created in his image. Those are just some of my early thoughts. I don't have a huge problem. I don't have any problem with Roger having a bovine heart. In fact, I'm glad he does because he's here and he gets to be a part of our lives. I feel blessed by that.
Right. John, what do you think? Of course, John Rush, Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado. The Christians who say that they're concerned about blending humans and animals, to Neil's point, I mean, we eat animals. When we eat animals, and we're taking part of that animal and basically having it absorbed into our system. Animal fat basically protein, gets absorbed, yes into mm-hmm. our bloodstream.
Correct.
So we are blending and mixing animals with our bodies anyway. Why is that acceptable in the eyes of God, but not acceptable to take a physical piece of that animal, like a valve or even a heart or a kidney, and inject that into the body? Where's that line crossed to where now suddenly it's not acceptable?
To me, it's, and I don't want to oversimplify this, and I'm not a, you know, a doctor or have any medical experience whatsoever. So I'm just looking at this as just, you know, regular Joe layman, you know, business owner, talk show host. But the way I see it is, you know, God created everything, and he gave us, you know, mind, heart, soul, the ability to, you know, decipher and learn and grow and do the things that we can do. And even medically speaking today, what we can do today, even versus 10 years ago, or let's go back even 100 years and, you know, let's go 150 or 200 years to, you know, bloodletting and, you know, the things that we have learned even in the last, you know, a couple hundred years, you know, are we much better off today as a society and as a world and as God's creatures than we were then? Well, of course we are. So, but this is, I guess, again, for me, the dividing line is if we can take something from the animal, use it inside of us to continue life, to me, I'm okay with that. But I do have a problem with taking human, you know, whether it's cells, DNA, whatever we're talking about, and going the other direction and trying to make an animal more human-like. That's where I would have an issue with it. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later in right. the program, but I would caution those Christians that would say, wait a minute, I don't think it's okay to take a pig valve, you know, or in this case, a pig kidney, and use that to save a human life. I would also ask the question, okay, so if somebody had a heart attack, they're lying on the floor, they're about to die, you don't do CPR, you don't revive them, you just say, oh, it's God said it's your time to go, so guess what, pal, you're going, I'm not helping. I mean, literally, that's kind of what those same people would do in that case, or am I wrong?
Yeah, no, you know what? I think it's an excellent point. I'll tell you what, take a short break. We'll pick it up right off of John's point next here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible verse by verse through in-depth attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on many Crawford radio stations or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at truthforlife.org or by calling 888-588-7884 and be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with John Rush, Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, Neil Boron Live out of Buffalo, New York, myself, Bob Duco from the Bob Duco Show out of Detroit, Roger Elsie Marsh, who's not with us. That's an inside thing. I was hoping somebody would pick up on Elsie.
Come on, man.
Who is having a surgical procedure today. We wish Roger the best. He has actually a cow's valve in his body, and they're doing some work on that, an echocardiogram to basically make sure that it's functioning okay.
Well, which, you know, Bob, let's throw that in there as well. So we've got procedures now where we can use magnetic, you know, magnets and electrification, and even, you know, even the CPR thing I said a moment ago. You know, you can shock somebody's heart back into the correct rhythm. We've learned that electricity can be used in a positive way in that way. And we, you know, we as mankind came up with electricity, which didn't exist even, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. So is it okay to use these modern inventions that we now have as mankind to help a human life, you know, continue on and survive? And are we supplanting God when we would shock somebody back to life, for example, like I said a moment ago?
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's such a great point. And, you know, Neil, my eye twitches whenever I have people say, oh, we're playing God, we're thwarting God's plan. If it's your time to die, it's your time to die. It's like, wait a minute here. I got a son that developed type 1 diabetes when he was 9 years old. Okay. 100 years ago, he would just die because we didn't have insulin.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So is it wrong now for diabetics to take insulin? I mean, come on. There's new medical technology that gets developed all the time. And there are different ways that we have to, in essence, keep someone alive. And even back before medical technology, during the time of Jesus, number one, was Jesus or his disciples thwarting someone's death time when they actually had God perform a miracle on them in the first place? But then secondly, just taking somebody back then, if they're choking, I don't know if they knew the Heimlich maneuver 2,000 years ago, Neil, but if they did that, then aren't they thwarting God's effort here? So there's always going to be some new way to bring us back to health when we could die if not for this new technology. And it makes no sense to me for people to say where we are right now is acceptable. Anything in the future that's thwarting God's plan, to me, that makes no sense.
Well, based on our upbringing, John and I can tell you flat out, legalism doesn't make sense. But I think you're describing is legalism.
because we want to
create a set of rules and regulations with checkboxes next to them so that we can go down the list and check things off and say, am I really living for God today? You know, we should all desire to read God's word, but, you know, check the box.
Real quick, Neil, I want to jump in for just 1 second, because really what you're saying is, and this is how I grew up, what they're saying is, and really, it's easier to live by that set of check marks. I mean, easier maybe isn't the right word, but it's easier to understand how to do all these things and check the right boxes than it is to think for yourself and understand right from wrong. That's where legalism, I think, fails drastically.
Exactly. Right. Because and the reason we like the checkbox is because it gives us a measuring stick. Did I read my Bible today? Did I not watch porn today? Did I share Christ with my neighbor today? And all of these are, you know, what I'm saying is that adhering to God's principles is a good thing. It will keep us from harm. God doesn't want us to fall into sin. But this, you know, this man-made set of rules and regulations that says don't drink, don't swear, don't take cow valves in your system. And we create this list, and if we check off the list, we feel better about ourselves. But God says, walk by the Spirit, and you'll not carry out the desires of the flesh. Bob, it's interesting you mentioned the Heimlich maneuver. I had that note in front of me. I was just thinking it through this morning. I'm thinking, what about the Heimlich maneuver? What about CPR and open heart surgery and personal trainers and vitamins and stents and the removal of tumors and advising people to rush out of a burning building, right? I mean, like,
right.
all of those are measures designed
waking up a sleeping person when the building's on fire.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just your time to go, Bob. I'm not waking you.
So, like,
thanks.
How far do we want to go with that argument that we're quote playing God? I guess this is open for argument, but I'm thinking that when Adam and Eve were placed in the garden, they were told that they were to work it, and that was pre-fall. That was before the fall of man.
Yes.
Afterwards, work it, but it's going to be harder now because you're going to have weeds to pull and everything else. But still, I assume that man, created in the image of God, would have some creative ability, not to be able to create things out of thin air. That's God's prerogative, but that somewhere along the line, Adam would have invented a shovel to say, you know what, moving this dirt's a whole lot easier with this shovel I just invented, and that he would, in other words, improve his situation to some degree. And how in the world could God be against that? What you're describing is the protection of human lives, which have resulted in those individuals coming to faith in Christ and leading others to faith in Christ, all to the glory of God. So I don't know how in the world that could be objectionable.
So in other words, Neil, the wheel was okay?
I'm going to go with yes on this one.
I'm trying to make this simple, guys, and laugh at that. But really, when we start talking about some of these things that we're talking about today in regards to taking a cow valve in the case of Roger, or a pig valve in the case of some family members I know, or in the case of the test that was done recently with the pig's kidney, you know, are we talking, in my opinion, it's no different than the invention of the shovel, Neil, in your point, or the wheel to help move things around. I mean, if we can further society and move humankind forward, I mean, God gave us all a really intelligent brain to think through these things, some more intelligent than others, let's face it. But the reality is God's given us those things. We're not doing anything, in my opinion, out of step in regards to saving human life. And I think, to me, that's the defining thing here when we start talking about what's the right thing to do versus the wrong thing to do.
Okay, now, before we move into the issue of cells and mixing cells between animals and humans, one final question about the transplants and the animal parts being transplanted. Is there any place that the line should be drawn? Like, for example, we're all in agreement, cow, pig valves, okay, that's fine. A kidney from a pig, who cares? You know, that's fine, a kidney. Does there come a point where it's like, okay, this goes too far? Like, for example, what about a heart? Since the Bible does specifically reference man's heart. Now, we know that's in a metaphorical sense, referring to his heart. It's not talking about the actual physical thing that's beating, okay, but the essence of his thoughts and such. But what about a heart? Would there be any problem with a human being having a baboon's heart or an animal's heart beating in their chest? And to even to take it a step further, what about a brain or partial part of the brain, if you will, although I can't imagine what benefit there would be in putting an animal's brain and so. But this goes the other way. We'll get to this in a little bit, putting a human brain inside of an animal. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But is there any kind of organ transplant, guys, that could potentially go too far? You see these humans that modify their bodies to try to look like freakish animals or devils or something like that. What about somebody who wants to try to turn themselves into some kind of a, you know, I can't remember what that mythological character was. It was a man's torso on a horse's body. But does there come any point where using animals and supplementing them in humans, does there come a point where it's, okay, now this guy's got not only a baboon's heart and he's got pig's kidneys and now he's, you know, he's got cow's lungs and he's gotten before. Does there come a point where it's like, okay, this is now too far. He's got too much animal operating inside of him.
If you believe that God controls everything, doesn't he have the ability to not allow those things to ever happen in the first place?
Yeah, but he does give us free will to do evil things.
He does. But we know that there are certain things, even medically speaking, that just haven't been accomplished yet. Is that because he's not allowing it?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you,
I'm just throwing it on the table. I don't know.
When I look at the stuff that happens in the world today, God doesn't welcome or condone the evil that happens in the world today. But let's face it, he, in a fallen world, he does allow people to make wrong and evil decisions, whether it's rape and murder, whether it's manipulating the human body. But I do actually, you bring up an interesting point, John, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about when we get into the manipulating of the human genome itself. Might God step in and place a medical governor, if you will, on how far we can actually go? That's part of what I want to talk about with you guys also. But hang on, another short break. We'll pick it up from there next here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over four decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with John Rush, Neil Boron, myself, Bob Duco. Roger Marsh is out grazing right now and recovering from the work on his cow, his bovine aortic valve. But we're talking about animals and humans and blending of the two. Before we move to the cellular and genetic aspect of this, though, let me ask you guys about something involving taking on transplants. There have been anecdotal accounts, and honestly, I don't know how real or just sensationalized this is, but I've seen actual news reports of people who received, we'll say, a kidney or something like that from a donor, and then they ended up developing some traits from that original donor. Like, for example, the guy who receives a kidney, and the kidney came from an English guy, and the guy wakes up and suddenly he talks with an English accent, and it's like, what? Or the woman who, she was never a country music fan, and after she came out of her operation, her heart transplant, she suddenly was a huge country music fan and whatever, and turns out the heart donor was a country music recording artist or something like that. I mean, we see stories like this. I've seen them all the time. I've even seen some extreme cases where someone could speak a foreign language or knew foreign words that they didn't know before, and sure enough, that was a Chinese person who I think a lot of these are probably hoax stories, but I've seen enough of them in legitimate news that it seems to be there's something to this. Might that be demonic trickery? Are 100% of those hoaxes? Or if some of those are legitimate cases where it's like they've taken on a little bit of the flavor of the donor, then doesn't that suggest that maybe with animal organs being injected into us, that we're taking on more of them than merely their nutrients when we eat their flesh?
I'll just jump in and say that as I was reading about some of this, you know, in bioethical publications and stuff, medical ethics and all that, that one of the things that holds back this kind of research is this fear factor we have of the whole idea, like that there's actually, they call it a yuck factor. Like, oh, I mean, if we have too many animal parts in us, are we part animal? Like, what does that mean? By the way, I'm not saying that means that we ought to get rid of the yuck factor and just pursue this wholeheartedly. I think there are some serious, like, ethical questions associated with all this. But, you know, right off the bat, I'm thinking of, what was that guy's name? It was Barney Clark. Remember him in 1982? He survived like 3 months, 4 months with a heart outside of his body. It was a mechanical heart.
Oh, I mean, that's right. Just, I do remember that.
Yeah. It was just made out of plastic and whatever else, plastic and metal, I guess. But, you know, human beings were able to devise this device that kept him alive for 3 or 4 months. Was God displeased with that? I don't think so. But, you know, going back to what you're saying, Bob, the whole idea of like taking on the traits of others, I don't mean this tongue-in-cheek, like in a trite way, but I have a friend that graduated high school, lived with me in Buffalo, New York till the age of about 18, went away to school in Florida and never returned. He set up his life down there, got married, and, you know, came back for Christmas once in a while, but basically lived in Florida the rest of his life. Today he's got a southern accent. I'm like, dude, You're from Buffalo, New York. What happened to you? So he took on the traits of people living in the South, and I think it would be not unusual if certain things were transplanted into us and we began to act more like it. By the way, I was reading about this. We talk about, Bob, is the term chimeras, right? I mean, just the human-animal hybrid idea, right?
But yeah.
But do you know that as far as I can see, that the actual definition of a chimera is somebody with like two genetic strains, which is actually what happens when we take on a blood transplant or a blood transfusion or take on someone else's, you know, kidney or something, that we actually then can be traced with two genetic strains. So we actually are human-human chimeras. Anyway, it's all very complicated, and I think there's a yuck factor involved. But as John was suggesting earlier, I think that the hard work that we have to do is pursue the heart of God and say, God, what's right, what's wrong in all of this? Because I'm not sure anybody really actually has the answer. The Bible doesn't say a lot about this kind of stuff. And somebody dogmatically will say that it does. But the truth is, I just think that this is an area where we really have to seek the heart of God, because I'm not sure anybody knows the answer to all of these questions.
John, what is your take on people taking on the traits and characteristics of donors, though?
I'm pretty realistic kind of a guy. I've never experienced any of that firsthand. I've only read bits and pieces, sort of like you, Bob. I wonder at times how much of that really is really real and true, because I've never met anybody that has ever been able to verify some of those things. And I guess, my mom is from Missouri, the show me state. I'm still kind of one of those guys. Show me first before I believe it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you may be right. It's hard to say. When I see a lot of anecdotal accounts of something, then I start going, well, maybe some of them are legitimate. And it does make you wonder, is there something intrinsic at the cellular level inside our human bodies that in some way operates symbiotically with the brain, so that in a crazy kind of way, memories or abilities or some of the makeup of that person's life can actually get transferred to someone else through their blood or through the cells in one of their organs or something. And if that is the case, then it seems like we're then also transferring more than just nutrients from an animal into a human being, but part of the experiences of that animal's life and almost their kind of identity, if you will. And does that pose a problem? I see no reason biblically why it does. I couldn't care less if somebody was walking around with, you know, all kinds of animal organs inside of them. It's like, you know what? Who cares? I don't see anything biblically that would preclude that at all. So, but here's what we're going to do. In the second half of this podcast, we're going to get into the genetic and cellular and inject, you know, kind of creating these chimeras and these hybrids between humans and animals, and where might that ethical line be drawn. So there's a lot more to unpack, folks, in the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast. Now, the second half, you may have to listen to online, okay? If it plays on your local station, then that's great. You listen to it right there. Or if it doesn't, then just go to CrawfordMediaGroup.net or Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you listen to your podcast. By the way, we get a lot of 5-star reviews. We always appreciate that, so we'll gladly accept those from you as well. But we're going to dive into the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast discussion on the blending of humanity and the animal kingdom, with Neil and John and myself coming up next.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continue in the second half of the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with John Rush, Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado, Neil Boron Live out of Buffalo, New York, myself, Bob Duco for the Bob Duco Show in Detroit. Roger Marsh, not with us today. Roger Marsh is basically convalescing with the veterinarian who is checking his heart, because he actually has a cow valve in his body. Most people didn't know that about Roger. He does. And so he's having an echocardiogram done on that today. And so we wish Roger the best, and certainly pray for him that everything will go fine with that. And we're talking about the idea of blending humans and animals, and from a Christian and biblical perspective, do we have any areas of concern? So with that said, guys, let's move to the human-animal hybrids. We know that laboratories have already, for years now, been placing human brain cells into mice. And one of the things that I read in one of these stories was that they always watch it very closely to make sure that if the mouse starts developing any kind of human-like characteristics or awareness, I'm not sure how you would identify a mouse acting like a human, but in
sitting
some
in front
way,
of the TV eating Cheetos, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Reaching for the remote control. Who knows? But if that mouse starts developing any kind of self-awareness, that, you know, almost like if you're looking at a mouse and you're making eye contact, and that mouse is almost in some strange way trying to communicate in a sense of, wait a minute, is there a self-awareness inside that mouse? Or then they would kill the mouse instantly if something like that happened. And then you do wonder, okay, what's going on inside the head of that mouse? But they're doing this with other animals. They're experimenting more and more. And they say that there is a legitimate medical research purpose for this. And here's basically what the argument is. And on the surface, it sounds pretty good and legitimate, that they need to determine exactly how humans and human cells will respond to certain medications and treatments. And we've done this totally on animals, but we're not ready to do a complete test on humans. So let's create some hybrids between the two, and let's see if by injecting human brain cells into this animal, and then we do some testing on that animal, do those human brain cells hurt the testing and the research or the drugs or the whatever? And so there is what could be argued a legitimate scientific medical research purpose for finding some halfway point between humans and animals to continue testing on. But the bottom line, we are moving further and further down the road of creating animals or altering animals in such a way that they could have a human being's brain cells in them, to the point that we don't know if that animal could possibly have some human memories. And what do you do if you have an animal, some goat that's sitting there thinking, wait a minute, why do I remember my wedding day and my bride wearing a dress? Why am I having a flashlight? Am I a goat or am I an animal? What am I here? You know, and I know this sounds crazy, but honestly, guys, we're already heading down that road, and I'm just kind of curious what you guys think about this. Well, Neil, maybe start with you. Are there lines that cross too far? Is that person a human being? Would they have a soul? Would God even allow this? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, lightheartedly, let me just say, I'm pretty sure I roomed with a guy in college who had an animal brain and a few human-like qualities.
Uh-huh.
Right? But I don't know the answer to that question. I seriously don't. Would it have a soul? I'm not sure. I could see somebody arguing, God is the author of life, so it has. If it has life, it's got a soul. And by the way, isn't this kind of an age-old debate? Does anybody actually know if animals have souls? I assume they don't, because what are we talking about? Mind, will, and emotions? But they do have life, and they've got a mind. They don't use it really well for human-like things. Do they have emotions? I don't know. They get mad.
Right.
I guess they could feel happy, but you know, do they have complex emotions like sadness or something? I'm not sure. Does anyone actually know? I don't know. So,
well, you know, actually, I have an opinion on that. Let me throw that out, because maybe, sure. I know this is a branch on the tree, but it's an interesting branch. Let's explore that, and then we'll get back to the hybrids.
Sure.
I do believe, although I'm not a big animal lover, I mean, we've had pets and such, but it does appear that they have genuine emotions. They can feel things like sadness and excitement, and so they can have those kind of emotions. The question is, and they certainly recognize their owner when they come home. And so the question is, do those genuine emotions equate to an eternal soul? And truthfully, I don't see biblically where it would. We know there's going to be animals in heaven, but will they actually? Yeah, but will it actually be our personal individual pet that will remember us with a wagging tail? Personally, I don't think so.
I doubt it.
There's logistical problems to that being the case anyway. If it's going to be your pet, well, where is that pet going to live? Because guess what? If it's the family pet, mom and dad aren't even going to live together anymore, because they're not going to be married. Your kids aren't going to be your kids. You're not going to live in the same house. So is God then going to create six clones of the family dog to live in each person's, to live in your mansion, Roger, and your mansion, or not Roger, your mansion, John, and your mansion, Neil, and my outhouse. And, you know, is God going to create all of these extra clones of the animal? Is the animal going to have to switch? So it seems to me there's going to be animals in heaven, but not the individual ones that we knew ourselves, which tells me, yes, they have emotions, but emotion does not automatically equate to eternal soul. But John, I gladly welcome your thoughts on this.
No, I tend to agree with you. I agree with you on that. Will there be animals in heaven? Yes. Will they be the same ones that we've had here? I highly doubt it. Although I guess the question I would have is, will it really matter once we're there? My feeling on that is no, it probably won't anyways, but will there be animals and things like that in heaven? Yeah, I mean, it's a whole nother podcast in and of itself, and what do we all feel like heaven will be like? And maybe we should do that someday, Bob, because there's so many different thought processes around that. But yeah, I'm with you. I think there will be animals in heaven, just not the ones we have with us now.
Right. And by the way, Neil, to that question, I have had people say, I've had callers call into my show and say, of course my pet will be with me in heaven, because heaven is a place of joy, fullness of joy, and God knows that my pet gives me such joy and whatever. And I've always thought, not to sound cruel, but that doesn't make any sense. We're not going to need our pets and their companionship for fullness of joy in heaven. I can't imagine, Neil, I can't imagine my wife not being my wife in heaven. We've been married 38 years in May. I can't imagine her not being my wife. But she's not going to be my wife in heaven. And you know something? I'm not going to feel any deficiency. I'm going to have loved ones in hell, and I'm not going to feel any sense of pain or loss from that. I'm going to be in fullness of joy in the presence of the Lord, and it's all going to make sense. And so if I don't need my loved ones to be in heaven instead of hell, if I don't need my wife to be my wife in heaven to have fullness of joy, I'm certainly not going to need little Snickers, okay, the cat, to make me feel fulfilled in heaven.
Yeah, but that's speculation. I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. But you know, of course, it was a parable, but Jesus told the story of the prodigal son, and when he returns, they killed the fatted calf. Like, I always love throwing that one in the face of all of my friends who are health food experts. And I think, you know, eating healthy matters, but listen, man, they threw some steaks on the grill that night, you know, and we're having some steak. How interesting is the marriage supper of the Lamb? If we really sit down and dine together with the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, if it's just like tofu and grape nuts, seriously. I do believe there's going to be animals in heaven. Will we recognize them the same way? Will they, you know, be so much lower than us that they're just, you know, running around at our feet as opposed to having some kind of interaction with us? I have no idea what the answer to that question is. But to go back to the idea of if they have emotions and stuff, somebody told me a story just the other day. A person and a dog came in the room, and there was a sad individual. I guess they had just learned of someone's passing. And that dog went over and stood next to them, you know, literally touching their leg, the side of the dog against the person's leg, like read the emotions of another person. I don't know if it was misbehaving, because I would think it would be trained not to do that for other people. But still, it seemed to be able to reading those emotions. I don't know the answer to any of that. But I think it's fascinating to speculate and to just know that whatever heaven actually looks like, it's all going to be good. Like, there's absolutely nothing there that would bring about a sense of, you know, sadness or depression or whatever. We're in the presence of God, which brings fullness of joy.
Right. No, it's very, very true. Which, by the way, it's the old classic. The biggest difference between your wife and your dog is lock them both in the trunk of the car for an hour.
That's right.
And then when you open the trunk, compare the reactions. Okay.
That's right.
Here's the biggest difference. All right. Let's take a break. We'll get back to the hybrid question of animals and humans as we continue this National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on many Crawford radio stations or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener-supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support and let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continue the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with John Rush, Neil Boron, myself, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh. Be back with us next week. We're talking about the blending, the mixing of humans and animals. Whether it's organ transplants, we talked about that before, but now these chimeras and these hybrids that are being created. John, you do wonder, will God allow – we talked about this before. God does allow evil and sinful things to be done, but you have to wonder, is there a point where he says, no, I am not going to allow you to go this far? And well, to me, it seems like this might be one of those areas.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference – to me, there's a difference between allowing evil and people to think and do and act upon the things that they can do themselves. In this case, we're talking about the creation of other life forms, and to me, that's where I feel like he can and will step in and say, no, guys, you're not doing that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Neil.
I was just going to add, too, that I think along those same lines, that there is a difference in my mind between creating something that enhances or protects or extends human life versus creating something that elevates animal life to human-like. I think that the direction matters in my mind, that we are the apple of God's eye, and I know it sounds haughty to say that, but in all of creation, when he created mankind, he said we are very good.
That's what Scripture says. We are.
We are created in God's image. So I was just worried about, you know, the cat lover who thinks that I shouldn't have said that about Fufu. But anyway, okay. Uh-huh. So, but the idea of elevating animal life and giving it human and godlike qualities is another ballgame. So when you get into procreation, if you're somehow creating human-animal hybrids that elevate the role of animals in this whole equation, I think that's when he steps in, personally.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I got to say, Neil, if you're concerned about being in trouble about cats and what you said about cats, I just got to tell you real quick, one of the biggest amounts of trouble I got in with my listeners a long time ago, I opened up the phone lines and it was a free-for-all kind of discussion. Somebody called in and said, Bob, do you think dogs go to heaven? And I flippantly said, well, I can't tell you about dogs, but I do know all cats go to hell, right? I'm just making a joke,
boy.
Right?
Email,
phone, coming through like crazy, right? So then I try to do damage control with more humor. And I go, no, come on, everybody. I said, I love cats. Cats are great. With a little bit of barbecue sauce, they're fantastic. it was just brutal. Took me weeks to recover from some of my listeners. Goodness. So I know it was brutal. Okay. Now, Neil, I tend to agree with you that I don't think that God will actually allow us to create animal human hybrids. They're going to be part one, part the other. But I also have to acknowledge that's just speculation on our part. You could also say, well, look at some of the things that God has allowed that seem confusing. And if God in his sovereignty knows where that line is drawn between somebody who, you know, is 49% human and 51% animal, and does that person qualify for a soul based on their level of self-awareness? God makes that decision, not us. So, John, your thoughts on what Neil says here, do you agree also that God is just not going to allow that? Because I lean toward thinking he's not going to allow it, but I'm also open to the possibility that he may, and he'll be the one to figure out where that weird ratio is of soul versus non-soul.
Yeah, I tend to, and you know, kind of even said this in the first hour, I tend to think that that's where God just says, no, we're not doing this, guys. We're not going this direction, and I'm not going to allow that to happen. You can attempt, you can try all you want, sort of like the Tower of Babel, but you know, the reality is, no, I'm not going to allow that. Sorry, this is the end.
Okay, now there is the, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, because I actually tend to agree with you But I'm open to the pot. I'm not going to hang my hat on that.
Sure.
But there are issues like, and I know this opens up a whole can of worms of debate, but the Genesis 6 Nephilim, were they
right.
really? There are a lot of Bible scholars who believe that they were, in fact, the offspring of demons mating with humans. And then those demons were taken captive, and God's not going to allow that to happen anymore, and he destroys the earth. But the bottom line, there are many Bible scholars who do believe, and they might be right, they might be wrong, but that you had these freakish part demon, part human people walking around. And if God did allow that, how is that really dramatically different from him allowing Island of Dr. Moreau animal humans to walk around?
Well, yeah, those are two different things. No, Neil, go ahead. Go ahead, Neil. You're probably a much bigger scholar on this than I have thoughts on that, but go ahead.
I have a very small statement. I want to hear what you have to say, so just don't forget what you're going to say. That I think that a lot of our speculation about this and the things we would try to tend to read into Scripture if we found something that looked like it was close to this whole issue overall is driven by our own fear and our sense of limitation and understanding of who God really is and what he can do and how big his grace is, but also how overwhelming his justice is. And like, so I just think that when we start down this road and we start trying to determine what God thinks about all this, that we're heavily influenced by our own fear and limited understanding of God's greatness and his sovereignty and everything else. I mean, we think we understand it, but we really don't. So I don't know. I just what I'm saying here is I think we can do the best we can to reason our way through it, pray our way through it, and search the Scriptures for answers to these things. But I think in the end, we really don't know till we get to heaven and get a chance to ask him.
Yeah, and I won't disagree with any of that. My feeling on, you know, what Bob said about, you know, what had happened in history and the biblical side of things and the Nephilim and so on. I mean, I guess I'm one of those guys that feel like, yeah, I think those things did happen. I think God did put an end to it. And the reason I say that is I think a lot of the, you know, gods of old, if you would, quote unquote, little g's, you know, Zeus mm-hmm. and so on, I think a lot of that came from that day, and it just carried forward. And again, I know there's people out there that would probably argue with me and say I'm crazy and so on, but to me, that's where some of those stories came from, was the Nephilim.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's take another short break. We'll pick it up from there next here on the National Crawford Roundtable.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's Word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with Neil Baran, John Rush, myself, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh. We'll be back with us next week. We're talking about all of the freakish animal-human blending taking place and talking about genetic altering and cells and things along those lines. So, guys, it sounds like we're in agreement with each other that even though we admit we're speculating, chances are that God will place limits on what level of genetic or cellular altering of humanity can take place in medical research, and that he will not allow a freakish Island of Dr. Moreau, part animal, part humans, animals that are basically self-aware and can write notes with their hooves for you to say, I wish I was fully human and not half goat, you know, or whatever, that we just can't imagine God allowing that Jesus is going to return, or that God is going to, until he does return, thwart any efforts for that to happen. Yeah, I think we're all in agreement that he's not going to allow that, but I am open to the possibility that he very well may, and that he'll be the one that sorts it out.
He certainly has stepped into human history before. I mean, think about what happened with Noah's flood, right?
Yeah.
Sodom and Gomorrah, and mm-hmm. the fact that his wrath was poured out on Jesus, so it doesn't have to be poured out on us. But ultimately, for those who don't turn to Christ, they already are faced with the judgment of God. One day they're going to understand that rejecting Christ is what costs them their lives eternally. So God has stepped in before. I think he'll step in again if he feels that he needs to. But let me just mention something that's similar to our conversation here. nobody mentioned cadaver bones, you know, and the Bible does talk about, you know, how the dead should be handled and or, you know, we're certainly not supposed to try to communicate with the dead, but we could apparently now medically take a dead cadaver bone and use it. It doesn't come back to life, but it's used in the structure and rebuilding of broken bones because new bone tissue forms around it. And then, you know, there's a number of other medical advances that have come along the way. I mean, transplant of things like eyes and, you know, attempts.
Retinas, things like that, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we've been doing a lot of stuff. And now when we get into the genetic stuff, that's a little different because then you're dealing with the possibility of procreation and everything. But the swapping out isn't really just organs. There's a lot of other things. I think cadaver bones are also used in dental implants. So there's a good possibility. There's a couple thousand people listening right now that have cadaver bones in them.
Well, I can not to make this all personal, but you know, when my daughter, when my 17-year-old daughter Colleen died, you know, the hospital asked me, would I sign, you know, to donate? And I said, take from her whatever you can use. And they did take bones. They took her leg bones. And it was actually, I think it was kind of insensitive at the funeral home on their part because they didn't realize that when they went to close her coffin, they lifted up the leg part of it. You lift up both halves of the coffin and then you close them. And when they lifted up the bottom half of the coffin, I could see that her legs, they didn't have them straightened out. They were curled around like spaghetti noodles. And that was obviously very difficult to look at. You know, and I also met a woman who hadn't seen in 15 years, and she got to see her grandchildren for the first time ever through my daughter's corneas. And so there are, you know, so these are very real things. I don't see anything wrong with this whatsoever. We're swapping out, interchanging out dead man's bones or whatever. I don't think we're to take a legalistic approach to that, oh, these can't be used to benefit someone else. You know, our bodies are basically shells, and if we can use them to benefit someone else, I just don't see any problem with that at all. But John, I wanted to get your take on what Neil was saying about, you know, swapping out body parts with each other, and it does seem legalistic for people to have concerns about any of that.
I'm on Neil's side on that one. I, again, have family members that have experienced some of the things that we're talking about right now and have no issues with that whatsoever. I think again, like I said in the first half, whatever we can do to prolong and extend life, I'm for. If we're doing things to change the way an animal looks, behaves, all of that, I'm 100% against that side of it. But in regards to what we're talking about, what Neil said, yep, I'm on Neil's side.
Okay, now, what about in our last few minutes here, let's talk a little bit about reproduction, because there's a lot of medical technology that's developed in the area of reproduction. There is the issue of in vitro fertilization, of course, and there are some that say in vitro fertilization is always wrong because if you're infertile, then that means you're not supposed to have children. I don't have a problem with in vitro fertilization as long as it's done in a medically ethical way where you don't create a glut of fertilized eggs that end up not surviving the freezing process or whatever. There are non-cost-effective ways to do in vitro where you only fertilize eggs that are going to be implanted and you don't take a bunch of other ones and put them on ice. And I do think that there's some ethical concerns about that, that we need to recognize these are fertilized eggs and so they need to be recognized as human beings. I know there's a lot of people out there that do in vitro fertilization. I just respectfully have to say that I don't think it's right to create fertilized eggs if they're not going to be implanted, if you're just going to freeze them, knowing full well that dramatically increases the chance of them being destroyed, let alone destroying them afterward, unless you are for sure going to take any extra fertilized eggs and donate them to families that want to adopt them and have them implanted. The bottom line, whatever eggs are fertilized, I think have to be given immediately the opportunity for growth and survival and not just put in a deep storage somewhere, freezer, where there's a dramatically increased chance they're going to die. Some are going to say it's
all by itself, by the way.
It really is. So I wanted to throw that out on the table and kind of as a teaser for, you're right, I think we have an entire podcast on that in the future. But for this conversation, I want to go beyond in vitro fertilization. What about things like actual test tube babies? What about cloning, for example? There are discussions about people who have had a loved one, like in my situation when my daughter died, we're heading down the road to be able to clone a child that died. You take some of their cells and you clone them, and that way you get that child back starting again from the beginning. I wouldn't want to do something like that. But cloning is something that we're going to continue. I think if it takes a while before Jesus comes back, guys, I think we are heading down the road of having clones walking around the streets, and even clones of people who have died who have been quote-unquote brought back through that process. What do you guys think about that? Would God allow that?
Possibly, and it's going to be a weird and strange world when that happens. I have just one thing real quick. The idea of cloning a human being, growing some type of a human-like being that has all the qualities of me or you or someone else for the simple reason of harvesting body parts, totally against that.
Right.
The idea of cloning for the sake of extending life, mostly against that, and I think God would be too, but we definitely need to talk about that in a future podcast. Yes. But let me just say, Mary and I are praying right now for a young couple, well, relatively young. They got married about 7 years ago, completely unable to have kids. Finally, she's pregnant through in vitro fertilization, and we're thrilled about that. Let me also say, we knew a couple that did a sperm donor kind of in vitro type thing, test tube baby, whatever. And she got pregnant and had the child, but they ended divorced because the husband was never able to fully grasp. He agreed to it, but was never able to fully grasp that wasn't his child. So, you know, it created a dilemma. Now, some people listening probably have been through that and everything worked out great. But as much as we provide, you know, positive solutions through some of this, it also creates difficult questions that can lead to real heartache. So I think we got to examine all of it. And I sure hope that we do something on reproduction in the future.
Yeah, we definitely will. John, what's your take as we kind of wind down our time here together?
Yeah, and I'm with you guys. I'm not, would never want to say that I understand what God would want to do in every one of these situations, because I don't know. And scripture is not even clear, because let's face it, those things just weren't talked about at that point in time. When it comes to the in vitro side of the fence, again, that's a whole discussion we can do a whole podcast on. You know, I've got very close friends that did that have twins, and Bob, everything you said I think is exactly right, and they would agree with everything that you said, because a lot of times what will happen is they'll implant, you know, six babies and say, okay, we've got six viable ones, how many do you want? We're going to abort the rest. And then those families go through those decisions, which I am fully against. I don't think that's the right way to do it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, we will definitely have an entire podcast devoted to reproduction issues, in vitro fertilization, cloning, test tube babies, sperm donors, surrogate mothers. I mean, you know, how do we look at all of that? So that is definitely it. If not a two-part episode coming up, because there's just a lot to unpack there, so we certainly will. This has been a very interesting discussion. We always appreciate you folks tuning in and listening to us again. Folks, you can listen to all the past episodes as well at CrawfordMediaGroup.net or wherever you listen to your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more.
By the way, Bob?
Yes.
Let me interject real quick. I just got a message from Roger. He wanted to remind everyone to eat more chicken. Okay.
Well, you know what? We knew he was going to get hired by Chick-fil-A. It had to happen.
Good one.
All right. He's going to start wearing a bell around his neck now. I mean, who knows where this is going to go? Anyway, so with that said, Neil Boron, Neil Boron Live, Buffalo, New York. Of course, John Rush, Rush to Reason, Denver, Colorado. Myself, Bob Duco, out of Detroit. And Roger, the bovine marsh from the bottom line, People's Republic of California. He'll be back with us next week. Guys, always great catching up with you. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Same to you.
You bet.
Thanks,
we'll
Bob.
See you.
God
Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless you.
You've been listening to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a biblical view of culture, current events, and politics. Thanks for joining us. The first half of the podcast can be heard each week on this Crawford Media Group station. You can download and subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Apple users can rate the podcast, and we'd appreciate your 5-star rating. The National Crawford Roundtable Podcast returns with a new discussion each week. This is a Crawford Media Group production.